Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back for more Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. Today is definitely going to be a fun show. We have a lot of college football talk to get into. Last night, we had the very first college football playoff rankings released. I get a kick out of these because they're interesting. Don't get me wrong. It gives us a talking point, and it does kind of set up the next couple of weeks of the season. But the overreaction regarding these college football playoff rankings always, it's outstanding. I remember going back to the very first one. Remember, Mississippi State was a team that was held in pretty high regard, those first initial few college football playoff standings. It's all right. These things will play themselves out. Now, with that being said, if you're a fan of the Clemson Tigers today, you're probably pretty upset because Clemson, the defending national champions, have won 9 straight games to start the season. And if the playoffs were to begin today, they would be on the outside looking in. Dabo Sweeney's group comes in at number 5, Penn State at number 4, Bama 3, LSU 2, and Ohio State number 1. So this goes back to the conversation we had earlier in the week about the AP top 25. LSU is 1 in the AP, Bama is 2, Ohio State is 3. The College Football Playoff Committee has a mind of their own. And if I'm being completely honest, I think they have pegged the top 4 teams in the country. I don't necessarily agree with the placing of these 4 teams. I think LSU is the best team in college football right now. At least they should be number 1. If they beat Alabama, there's no doubt they're going to be number 1. That's a different story. But the top 4 teams, I agree with it. I mean, Penn State at number 4, they're giving the Big Ten some love. Going into the season, the Big Ten was one of those conferences, well, had more top 25 teams than any other Power 5 conference. Bama at 3, yeah, I can buy that. LSU, Ohio State, I'm fine with it. If you're a Clemson fan, and we'll get into this later, Clemson will get in if they win out. Okay, because Penn State still has to play Ohio State, LSU still has to play Alabama, Georgia, who was number 6, they're going to have to play LSU or Bama at some point in time this season. Utah and Oregon at 7-8. Those two teams more than likely will have to play each other, and if they don't, that means one of those two teams lost, which takes them out of the running. This will play itself out. I assure you that if Clemson runs the table and they go undefeated, the committee will not keep them out of the playoffs. But now, we know what's going to be very interesting as far as some of the matchups in the coming weeks. We know we got some great ones coming up right out of the gate. We get number 2 LSU taking on number 3 Alabama. And while I don't think it's an elimination game, the loser of that contest, their playoff resume is going to take a heavy hit because they're not going to be playing for the conference championship. And as we discussed earlier, again, we know likely the Pac-12 champion is going to have one loss and will beat a top 8 team to win the Pac-12 championship. Yeah, that matters. You get beyond LSU and Alabama, we have Ohio State and Penn State coming up on November 23rd. And that may essentially be a playoff game. Penn State's not out of the woods. I mean, they have Minnesota coming up this weekend. Ohio State's schedule, it hasn't been great so far this season. But if you take a look at the games they have leading up to the game with Penn State, they have Maryland and Rutgers, so they should be unbeaten when they get to that point. Then they'll have to beat Michigan, who comes in at number 14. High drama in college football. I love it. The first playoff rankings come out, and now we can start talking about it. I will say this much. College basketball seems so meaningless at this stage. At this stage of the year, it seems meaningless. Not that it is, because I love college basketball. I enjoyed what we saw last night with Kentucky and Michigan State. Don't get me wrong. But when the college football playoff rankings come out, college basketball and the way they handle their postseason, which I'm not a fan of, it just seems like it takes a backseat. Let's take a look at some of the other news coming out of college football. Remember Greg Schiano? Had a lot of success when he was at Rutgers. Well, now Rutgers is looking at potentially bringing him back to fill that vacancy. It's been a whirlwind of a 5 years for Greg Schiano. Had a lot of success with the Scarlet Knights. They took a step forward in meeting with him today. They met for several hours, and after that interview, Schiano did not take the job. So I started doing my research, and it's well documented what he's looking for. ESPN's reporting that a deal's far from being done because he is requesting a new indoor facility. He wants upgrades for other facilities, and he wants a dramatic increase in assistant coaches' salaries. Butch Jones, now an offensive analyst at Alabama, also interviewed for the job last week. ESPN's also reporting that there's a very short list of potential candidates to replace Chris Ash, who was fired September 29th. He was 8-32. In three-plus seasons. I think Schiano's the right way to go. This is definitely a story worth monitoring. Outside of that, really not a lot is happening in the national sports front. It's a little quiet. I know tonight we get NBA basketball back as the Utah Jazz will take on the 76ers. This is a very fun game. I like this one a lot. 7 o'clock tip-off. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. The Jazz right now, they've gotten off to somewhat of a lackluster start to the season. I had a little higher expectations for this team, but it's early. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. The Jazz right now at 4-3. They join a group of Western Conference teams with four wins. The only team in the West that has more than five wins right now was the Lakers. And then you have the Nuggets and the Suns at five wins with the Clippers as well. I believe the Jazz are going to be fine, but this is a great early test for this team as they go up against the 76ers, who are sitting at 5-1. And I really like Philadelphia. I like this lineup front to back. Even the depth chart, you look even beyond the starters. I mean, Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, who's been really the quietest, best player in the league up to this point. I'm talking about quiet, someone that we're not talking about. Al Horford, Joel Embiid. I mean, that's a solid lineup through and through. Then you go to their bench, and I really like what they have coming off of the pine as well. I think it's a great test for the Jazz. I do want to talk NBA basketball a little bit later on in the show, because continuing to look at the schedule and what's in store tonight, we have a nationally televised game between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Clippers. Giannis Antetokounmpo wins the MVP. Kawhi Leonard wins the Finals MVP. These are two of the best players in the NBA. But we won't get to see Kawhi Leonard play again tonight because he's going to rest due to load management. And this absolutely drives me bonkers. And the league has to step in and do something about this. TV ratings in the NBA are down. And we all know it to be true today. Superstars, they turn the needle, right? We tune in to watch superstars. It's Giannis and Kawhi, and we don't get it. And it's the second time that Kawhi has missed a game. The league has to do something about it. Doubleheader tonight on ESPN. Bucks, Clippers, that would be game two at 8 p.m. You know what the first game is? It's Golden State and the Rockets. And the Warriors are depleted right now as well. So who's the big stars tonight? Harden and Westbrook. And Houston should win this game. And then Giannis. I mean, we're missing a lot of star power in these nationally televised games tonight. I get it in Golden State, but the Clippers continuing to do this with Kawhi Leonard, to me, it's just not right. It's not right for the people that pay money. Look, if you're a Jazz fan, you probably spent some money to go watch Kawhi. He didn't play because of load management. It's insane to me. I hate it, and the league has to step in and do something about this. Let's take a look at the schedule tonight outside of the two nationally televised games. 5 o'clock hour, we get the Knicks and the Pistons. The Wizards will travel to meet the Indiana Pacers. We get Golden State at Houston, as we talked about. Chicago at Atlanta at 5:30. The Kings travel to meet the Raptors, also in the 5 o'clock hour. Two games in six, we get Minnesota at Memphis and the Mavericks, who are very fun. That's a fun team to watch. They'll play host to the Orlando Magic. Jazz Sixers at 7 p.m., and then we get the Bucks and the Clippers to wrap things up at 8. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports scene. We are going to talk more local sports on the show today. Your recap is coming up in just a moment. Plus, we'll be joined by USU Eastern women's soccer coach Ammon Bennett. And then the fall season, it is complete, and we can move into the winter sports season. The swim squads for both Carbon and Emory competing yesterday. Emory getting the best of Carbon and South Sevier. We can talk more local sports in just a bit. Coach Ammon Bennett will join us on the show today, and we'll talk some college football. It's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the winter sports season is officially underway. In fact, swimming has already began for both Carbon and Emory. Now, today we'll take a look at the upcoming winter sports schedule for the Pinnacle Panthers. The Pinnacle boys basketball team will open up the season on Friday, November 22nd at home as they play host to a 5 p.m. tip-off against RSL. The team will then return to the court on Tuesday, November 26th for another home contest against Wendover. In fact, the first three games of the season for Pinnacle will be at home. The first game in December will mark the first road contest as they travel on the road to take on Gunnison. The boys' high school basketball season will run through early February, and then in the third week of February, it'll be the opening round of the 1A state championship tournament. Now, the Pinnacle Panther girls basketball team will open up the season on the road on Thursday, November 21st, as they travel to Rockwell. This contest is scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. The first home game of the season will take place on November 26th against Wendover. The team also has key dates, including road contests with the Grand Red Devils on December 4th and a road tilt with Cypress on December 6th. Like the boys, the first round of the 1A state championship tournament will begin on February 21st, and it will continue through February 29th. For more on the Pinnacle Panthers winter sports schedule, make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com. Now, Green River High School will also begin the basketball season on Friday, November 22nd, as the boys will play host to Westridge at 7 p.m., Following that contest, they'll travel on the road to Manila for a tournament on December 6th and 7th. The Green River girls basketball team will open up the season at the 1A preview with the Sevier Valley Center as they take on Escalante. That contest, again, will be on November 22nd, which is a Friday. For more on the Green River winter sports schedule, visit CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to junior college athletics, and earlier this week, we caught up with head coach Jared Woodhouse, who recapped the 2019 season for his soccer squad, which came to a close last Friday. Today, we'll catch up with the USU Eastern women's soccer coach, Ammon Bennett. He, too, will recap the 2019 season. The women suffered a 5-2 loss to Salt Lake in the opening round of the Scenic West Athletic Conference tournament this past Friday. Coach Bennett will join KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning today at 4 p.m. Coming up on November 28th, that'll be the 11th annual Turkey Trot. It'll kick off at 8:30 a.m. This annual 5K run is become a tradition here in the Castle Country, and the cost is one canned food item per participant. Carbon County Recreation is collecting food for the local food banks for the holiday season, so you can come out and prepare those bellies for the big Thanksgiving meal with a fun event, the annual 5K. You'll meet at the Fairgrounds Ice Skating Rink parking lot. Again, this is on November 28th, and don't forget to bring a non-perishable food item donation. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene, where tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the Utah Jazz will play host to the Philadelphia 76ers. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the live play-by-play call, which will begin at 6:50. Again, tip-off is set for 7. The Jazz enter tonight's contest with a record of 4-3. Philadelphia, on the flip side, 5-1. Right now, the top squad in the Eastern Conference. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to wrap up the soccer season here in the Castle Country. Over the weekend, the USU Eastern women's squad falling to Salt Lake Community College 5-2 in the opening round of the Scenic West Athletic Conference Tournament. Very entertaining game. Not a bad season at all this year for the Lady Eagles. And joining us to talk about the season in general and also this past weekend right now, we have Coach Ammon Bennett over the phone. Coach, I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you again for the time.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Absolutely, Coach. You guys wrap up the season this past weekend, a loss to Salt Lake Community College. We had you on the show last week, Coach, and you had mentioned that you guys really wanted to shake things up. You were going to do things a little bit different because doing the same thing over and over again, it's kind of foolish in a sense. You guys come out and you press Salt Lake, and with about 25 minutes remaining in the game, you guys were within striking distance.
Yeah, you know, we had it 2-1. We'd given up two early goals on, you know, there were some questionable calls and some calls that could have gone either way. We felt like the ball was kicked out of the keeper's hands for Salt Lake's first goal. It kind of changed some things. But you know what, like a lot of coaches will say, those are instances where it goes in favor of the other team, but we have some early opportunities. We had an opportunity probably 4 or 5 minutes in the game where we'd taken a great shot, the keeper mishandled it, and it's just kind of sitting right there for one of our players to come in and tap it into the goal. And you know, we get there and we take the shot and miss it. And, you know, if we put that in, boy, the whole game changes. So, we were able to do that. Salt Lake got up on us 2-0, which is what we did not want, but came out second half. We regrouped, were able to score a goal, make it 2-1, make it interesting from that point. But some other things happened in the game that just are out of your control when calls don't go your way. It's part of the game. It's part of athletics. You got to learn to deal with it. But when there are goals for the other team, that makes it tough.
No question, Coach. And going in and looking at the way the game kind of shaped out, obviously you have to be happy with the game plan of going into this contest. It was the right mindset. I know in talking to you off of the cuff, you said the next day you saw Snow implement a lot of the same tactics that you guys had applied, and that resulted in a win, an upset win over Salt Lake.
Yeah, you know, we had a... you know, all year long, and kind of when you're healthy, when we were healthier, because we had a lot of injuries, but it just wasn't working what we were trying to do against those teams. And so, you know, we decided against Salt Lake, you know, we're going to go right at them. We're going to get very compact in our defense. We're going to take away a lot of their space. And it worked early. I knew it wasn't going to work the whole game. Part of it is, you know, when we have injuries, and no matter what you're doing, you might not have the right horses in the race. Anyway, we tried to change some things up, and it really kind of had, I thought it had Salt Lake confused a little bit early. Unfortunately, some questionable calls again changed, so we had to change the formation again all the way through the game. We actually played three different formations throughout the game, which you typically don't see a lot. But yeah, in the next game, you know, Snow comes out and plays Salt Lake. And Salt Lake actually scored first, and then Snow tied it up at half, and then they scored two more in the second half. But a lot of what they were doing was very similar to what we wanted to do. They were going a little bit more direct at Salt Lake. They were getting a little bit more pressure on their back line, and Salt Lake made mistakes, and we believed that they were going to against us, and they did. You know, we scored two goals against them, which typically is going to keep you in the game, but two goals given up on the other side for questionable calls, you know, ended it for us. So, I think we had the right idea. We just weren't able to sustain it and pull it off with so many injuries that we had.
Coach, if we go back and we look at the course of this game in itself, and I want to go back to something that you had mentioned to me off of the cuff, at one point in time in this game, you felt pretty comfortable about where the team was sitting. And I mean, I think that speaks volumes as to how competitive this game really was. Because again, we're talking about a very good Salt Lake team defensively. They've been on point all season long. And there was a point in time where you felt good.
Yeah, so, you know, again, we felt like we had some early chances, even though we'd given up a couple of goals, and, you know, we were a little frustrated at halftime. We made some adjustments, and so we come out for 20 minutes. The game's kind of stagnant. You know, I wouldn't say that either team had any advantage the first 20 minutes of the second half, and then, you know, we started to get some nice control, some nice movement, and started to possess the ball, and all of a sudden we have a nice little breakaway, and Ashley Friendly scores a great goal, and it's 2-1. you know, and you could start to see a little bit of frustration coming from Salt Lake. They again, momentum in soccer is so interesting because you don't get timeouts like other sports, so momentum can tend to go for a long time. So the next seven, 8 minutes, we really were in control. We're not totally in control, but now the game became very open. And then of course there was two girls that challenged for a ball in the box, and they banged heads, and for some reason we got a penalty kick called on us, and Salt Lake scores, and then the momentum just immediately switched back. So with about 17 minutes to go in the game, it was 2-1, and a very, very competitive game, and then it just blew open for them on the penalty kick, and we scored another late goal. Morgan Cragen ended up scoring a nice goal from an assist from Claire Bowman with about 7 minutes to go. So from about the 17-minute mark to about the 7-minute mark, there was three goals scored from Salt Lake and one from us. There were four goals scored. So the game really kind of opened up, but unfortunately, when you get behind a really good team like Salt Lake is, you know, you're just going to be very difficult to come back and win that game. But it was a good effort, but overall just not enough.
Again, our guest right now, Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Women's Soccer Squad. Coach, you finished the season at 9-6-2 overall. And again, you and I had talked about the amount of injuries and somewhat weird injuries that have occurred to this team. And obviously, that's not something you can account for at the beginning of the season. So, matched up against your expectations, how did this season go?
Well, I mean, again, you always know there's going to be some injuries, and you hope they're not, you know, too catastrophic like we had. But, you know, we lost starting center back, two starting central midfield players, you know, two very creative players, two girls that are probably would have each had anywhere from 7 to 10 goals each and 7 to 8 assists, you know, a starting forward, three ACL injuries, lots of concussions, suffering shoulder. You know, and even going into the last game, you know, we have two girls sitting on the bench and one on the field, our starting goalkeeper with a messed up back, and two girls on the bench with just such bad sprained ankles that they're on the bench but they can't play. So it's disappointing that the way that happened, but, you know, our girls really fought hard. We made every game competitive. We had a really, really strong bench. Unfortunately, some of those girls ended up having to be starters. And that just kind of changed the makeup of the team and how we approach things. I'm very proud of the girls. You know, they worked hard and we had a good year in a lot of ways. But I don't know that we ever really would fully know our expectation had we been able to be healthy. I felt like we would have really challenged for the conference title. I think we could have won the regular season, but you know, that's why we play sports. So it's you can't ever plan for certain things with, you know, and injuries and stuff like that happen. That's just part of the game. We did our best. I thought our girls really bought into ideas and what we wanted them to do, even in the end. That's credit to them. Unfortunately, we bowed out earlier, a lot earlier than we wanted to.
Now, what's next for the program, Coach? I know that there really never is an off season, especially in the form of recruiting and being able to sign kids as early as November 1st. What's next for this program?
Well, we're just going through that right now. We have several girls that we're just about to sign. We'll sit down with players that are coming back next year. We'll have some interviews with them, and there's always some kids that decide to move on or they don't want to play. We have some girls that are actually going to go on church missions. We have a girl that's going to be getting married. So we'll go through and we'll reevaluate everybody that's here, and we'll have some chats, and we'll take some time off for a week or two, and then, you know, they'll start kind of getting back into the weight room. We'll start doing some workouts indoor, playing some indoor soccer for a lot of technical work. And then we'll get back at it as far as training again, serious on the first of February. So we're moving along. You know, it's always that's the pattern that you kind of go through. I'll take some time off just to relax for a little bit and get my mind back back squared away. It takes me a few days to get back into the idea of going through all that again. But that's the life of a college coach.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Coach, last question before I let you go. There's always a lot of talk about how fast the JUCO sport of soccer has grown throughout the state. Still, the SWAC conference is still very young when it comes to this sport. Didn't take long for a school like Salt Lake or even Snow to really get acclimated with JUCO soccer. In your estimation, how was this year's conference competition compared to years previous?
Well, I believe on both sides, the men's and the women's side. I don't coach the men anymore, but if we talk about just the women's side, you had four of the six teams at some point during the season all nationally ranked. You look back on the regular season games, there were a ton of games that were 1-0 wins between the teams, or 0-0 ties, or a 2-1 loss. They were all extremely competitive. Even Truckee Meadows, which was new to the conference this year, we go down there and it takes us overtime to beat them. It was different here. We beat them pretty handily here, but then Salt Lake goes out there and squeaks out a 2-1 victory. CFN, huge improvement with their competitive level on their team. In fact, their conference player of the year came from College of Southern Nevada. Very talented midfield forward on their team. As far as a conference across the country, I coached at Iowa Western, where we were constantly ranked anywhere from 1 to 5 in the nation and have played for the national championship twice. Overall, as a conference, our conference from top to bottom, I think is one of the best junior college conferences in the country. They're just starting to give the conference some recognition. Early in the year, we go down and we play all of the teams in our conference, play teams out of Arizona, and we beat every one of them. I think you're going to see Snow College will beat Paradise Valley, and Snow College will end up going to the national tournament, and Snow College will do very well at the national level. I can even see Snow College reaching the semifinals of the national tournament. Wouldn't be surprised to see them in the national championship game. Our quality of play is really, really high.
Well, Coach, it is always a pleasure to get you on and talk about soccer, not only the USU Eastern soccer program, but soccer in general. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on completing another season, and I'm sure we'll be talking again real soon.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern women's soccer team. We're going to break for just a moment. Plenty more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We still have to talk college football. Last night, we had the first playoff rankings released. A little bit of a surprise. Clemson not inside the top four. Don't panic. The Tigers are going to be just fine. We'll talk about that and more when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We didn't get to talk any local sports yesterday, so we're going to double up on it today. Fun event right around the corner. For those of you who are into running, we have the annual Turkey Trot. 11 years this has been happening in the Castle Country. And joining us right now, the organizer of the Turkey Trot, we have Scott Merrill. Scott, it's always a pleasure to get you on Drive Time Sports. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me here, Jordan.
I mentioned a couple of the events that I guess your name is kind of synonymous with, right? People know you from the Lunatic.
Yeah, I'm right? The Lunatic guy. So.
Yeah. Well, you definitely do a great job in creating these events. And I know we have another one coming up on Thanksgiving. A little unique. It's the Turkey Trot, but it's been around for over a decade.
Right. About 11 years ago. Well, 11 years ago, I kind of wanted to have something to do on Thanksgiving Day. I knew other communities had Turkey Trots, 5Ks or runs that they put on. And so me and a group of friends got together and put together a run. And then the next year, there were a few more people. And then the next year after that, Terry Willis had started up one of her own, not knowing about ours. And so the year after that, we combined forces together. And for years, Terry Willis and I have helped, put this on. And it's one of those things, depending on how cold it is or if it's your year at your house or the in-laws' house, we'll go anywhere from 8 people the year it was 5 degrees to up to about 100 people we had one year. And it's great because people can come out and get a little exercise and make room for that Thanksgiving meal. And it's free. Really, the only thing we ask is that people bring a canned food item for every participant, and we collect that. And then once the food bank opens up again after the holiday, we take it down there and donate it and hopefully start filling some of their shelves up after Thanksgiving.
Now, Scott, I know that everything that you do, you're very particular with as far as the way the event has to take place and as far as the courses and that goes. So explain to me the turkey trot, maybe for someone who has never participated.
Okay.
What are we looking at as far as a course?
So, and this course is great. Terry Willis actually designed it, but we meet up at the event center up at the fairgrounds, the parking lot there. And there's a course that's laid out all the way to the base of Pinnacle Peak. Now, that's 4 miles. And so a person that runs all the way out to Pinnacle Peak and back would complete 8 miles for the day. Not to scare anyone off from that, because we don't require everyone to run that full 8 miles. But what we decided to do was measure off in half-mile distances along that course. So if a person wanted to come out and say, well, I've got enough time to run a mile, they'd run to the mile marker that says a half mile. They'd turn around and go back, and they'd get their mile in. Or if you say, well, I just want 5K, then you could run out to the mile and a half marker, turn around and come back. So really pick your distance between 1 mile all the way up to 8 miles.
Now, how many people actually take advantage of that 8 miles?
I'd say that we've got a couple of ladies that do the full 8 miles every single year, two or three of them at least.
Yeah, it's a nice little workout before Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's fantastic. Again, it's the annual turkey trot taking place November 28th. As far as meeting, it's early in the morning, 8:30 a.m., right? That's when you guys will meet.
Correct. We'll meet at 8:30. There's been years that we've had some participants say, hey, I just called my family. They're on their way up. Please don't start. And so we haven't started till 8:45. There's years that we sit around and no one else shows up, so we'll start a little early. So really, we tried to pick a time that makes it so people can get up, get some food in the oven, come on down, and then, you know, not take up their whole day. They can get home and get cleaned up and do what they need to. So yeah, 8:30, it is early when it's a little bit cool, but I think it's a good time to just free people up for the rest of the day.
Right. Well, Scott, one of the things I love so much about talking with you, be it the triathlon or the turkey trot or whatever it is we're talking about, you're passionate about fitness. You're passionate about long-distance running. I mean, you have to be, right? So now you've taken your passion and you've tied it into trying to help out the community as well, because you guys do ask for canned food, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we ask for canned food. You can also bring in box goods. Any item that the food bank will accept, we accept too, and we take it down to them. Most years, we are pretty good about getting at least 100 pounds of food to donate in. There's some people that bring just one can for themselves, some people that bring a whole case for themselves. So it's great to see the community support it and really reach out and do that.
Again, we're being joined right now by Scott Merrill. We're talking about the 11th annual Turkey Trot, which will take place Thanksgiving morning, beginning at 8:30 a.m. You talked about where to meet the ice skating rink. That's where
right,
you need to meet.
Really, yeah, right where you'd park to be at the ice skating rink at the fairgrounds.
Scott, I know that it is important for those who love this type of thing to take advantage of it, because really there's not a whole lot more going on for the remainder of the year till we get out of the winter months, as we go into the winter months, right?
Right, yeah. If you're a runner, now is it, unless you run the treadmill, you know, or brave the slick roads. There's not much else to do, local runs. So really, if you just want one more good run in, I guess, you know, people can always run on their own, but if you want to run with a big group of people and in an organized race, this probably your last chance this year.
How competitive is it?
Oh, I don't think it's competitive at all, unless it's between maybe brothers. Yeah, friends.
Yeah.
Or we've seen a few brothers that show up that maybe they haven't seen each other for a full year, and they get together at their parents' house for Thanksgiving dinner. And some of those guys will jaw back and forth and, you know, go and run. But past that, there's no prizes at the end. There's nothing that way. So it's really just feeling good about yourself and, you know, enjoying the day.
Oh, that's good, because again, turkey bowls, which a lot of people play, those can get a little competitive. Oh,
right. We're definitely nowhere near turkey bowl status.
Scott, I want you to go ahead and take the time and invite everybody out to the annual turkey trot, which again is up and coming on Thanksgiving Day, Thanksgiving morning, bright and early, 8:30 a.m. Go ahead and invite
right.
the entire
Thank you.
Community.
So everyone, if you've got family members that enjoy running or even just want to walk, or they're looking for something to do because they've come to your home and they're spending Thanksgiving with you, please pass this word along. You don't have to go to a website and pre-register. You don't have to go in anywhere. You don't have to bring in any money. Even if you couldn't bring a canned food item, we'd still let you participate, but we'd love to see you make a food item donation. Come on down, or rather, I guess, up to the fairgrounds, 8:30 in the morning. We'll kick off the run. You can put anywhere in from 1 mile to 8 miles. The road is good enough that you could have a toddler in a stroller, pets on a leash, different things like that. We do have some kids that will ride bikes next to their parents. It's a pretty friendly course, and there's not a lot of uphill and downhill, and it's a great time. So come on out, make room in your stomach for that big Thanksgiving meal, and just enjoy some time with your family outdoors.
Scott, thank you again for taking out the time to come in and talk about the Turkey Trot. I know we'll be talking again about events here relatively soon, but again, I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Again, that's Scott Merrill, who organizes the annual Turkey Trot coming up Thanksgiving Day. We're going to break for just a moment. We'll come back to college football, winners and losers from the first playoff rankings. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
Shotgun snap to field. Play action fake. Throws deep left side for the corner of the end zone. Caught for the touchdown. What a catch by Austin Mack.
When you win by 1 point or 50 points, it's a win. It's kind of like when I make a birdie in golf. You know, most time when I make a birdie, it usually hits off a tree and runs across the green. And I put it in, I write 3 on my scorecard.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You know it ain't my time to call it a day, but it's about time you remember the name,
Let's talk college football. Yesterday, we got our first taste of the rankings from the College Football Playoff Committee. I'm going to go back to what I said earlier on in the show. It's an exciting time, I get that, but we have to remember to keep things in perspective. Now, with that being said, there are some massive takeaways, and it sets the stage for some really important games, and it also gives us, it takes away the unknown element, which we have for the first 8-9 weeks of the season. You know, there's that unknown. How's the committee going to view this? You hear that a lot during the first 2 months of the regular season. Well, now we know how the committee has viewed it. And looking at the way the rankings stack up, again, if you missed it, Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Alabama 3, Penn State 4. The next two in would be Clemson at 5, Georgia at 6. Georgia's the highest ranked one-loss team in the country. That kind of surprises me a little bit, especially based on quality of loss. It tells you what the committee thinks of the SEC. Because really, if we're going off of quality of loss out of the one-loss teams, to me, there's no doubt that Oregon has to be the top one-loss team in the country. But the Ducks are fine. You see, you can make these cases, but in the same breath, you have to remember what certain teams are fine. Yeah, it seems like the world is just falling right now if you're a Clemson fan, because they're not inside the top four. Trust me, Clemson will get inside the top four unless they shoot themselves in their own foot. I mean, they have NC State, they have Wake Forest, they have South Carolina. That's it. And when you take a look at the strength of schedule for this team, it's not good. Texas A&M's their best win of the season. Really, Clemson has not played anyone. I get it. They went out, they win the ACC, they get in. There's no question about that whatsoever. And there are teams ahead of them that have to play one another. They're going to be fine. Penn State is more than deserving to be in the top four at this particular time. Doesn't mean that Penn State's going to be there when it's all said and done. In fact, there's a good chance that Penn State has 2 weeks in this top four, and then they're gone. I think at Minnesota coming up this weekend on the road, that's not a gimme either. But when you look at the strength of schedule for Penn State, I mean, they beat Michigan. They beat Iowa. They thumped on Purdue. They thumped on Michigan State. They have more notable wins. They beat Pitt. They have more notable wins than, say, Clemson. So I'm all for it. I'm all for Penn State being where they're at right now. Doesn't mean it's going to end that way. But the Nittany Lions, they control their own destiny. And you would think that they would have regardless, because they're in a Power 5 conference and they're unbeaten. Bama and LSU, again, those two teams will go toe-to-toe. I think this is the most interesting storyline for me with this first college football playoff ranking. Ohio State, obviously, is the most impressive group for this committee. Which means, while the SEC is held in high regard, LSU and Bama is 2 versus 3. The winner will most certainly move up to number 1. But I don't know that the loser gets in. I mean, there's always the conversation, could the SEC get two teams in? If you have, your champion and then you have a one-loss SEC squad, could they get in? I don't know if they can this year. And a lot of that has to do with the Pac-12. And that's what we can focus on here. Everything is coming together for the Pac-12, which over the last 4 years, they've been the key of criticism when it comes to Power 5 conferences. Oregon and Utah should be competing in the conference championship game. That would put a one-loss team up with the potential to move even higher by that point in time, because they both will probably be around that 6 or 7 mark if they can win out. All they need to do is hold serve. That's it. It's a realistic scenario for the Pac-12 to get in. That's what was painted yesterday. And looking at the remaining schedule for both the Utes and Oregon, Utah will get a bye week this Saturday. Then they'll play host to UCLA on November 16th. November 23rd at Arizona. They close out November 30th at home against Colorado. I mean, the Utes have a realistic chance of getting in. That would set up a showdown with Oregon. And you look at what the Ducks have left. And Oregon always has the possibility of going Oregon. But the good news for the Ducks, they've already gotten Stanford out of the way earlier this season. Home against Arizona, at Arizona State, home against Oregon State. There is no reason to believe that we won't get 5-6 or 6-7 when it comes to Oregon and Utah. And all you really have to do is look at the teams ahead of them. I would assume that Georgia loses one more game. I don't know if it's to Auburn. I don't know if it's in the SEC championship. I just see too many flaws in this team. I don't think they've gotten much better from what we saw at the beginning of the season. So you'd have to assume that Georgia's going to lose a game. Clemson's probably going to win out, but Bama and Penn State, both of those teams, Bama, Penn State, LSU, Ohio State, two of those four teams are going to suffer at least one more loss. Okay, so Utah could inch their way up to that 5-6 spot before they go into the Pac-12 title game against Oregon. It's setting up for a really, really fun stretch for both Utah and Oregon and the Pac-12 in general. Let's take a look at some of the other winners. The selection committee loved the American Conference enough to put four teams in the back end of the rankings. Four. Cincinnati, Memphis, Navy, and SMU. Now, this obviously will not play a factor in the actual final playoffs, but it will play a factor in the New Year's Six Bowl, which means the conference champion, if they have just one loss, which is surely going to set up that way, they'll grab a New Year's Six Bowl. So those teams were definitely winners. Cincinnati, Memphis, Navy, and SMU. The Big Ten, they were big winners. Ohio State's been dominant for 2 months under Ryan Day, and now they're at the top of the rankings. Like I said, it may only last a week because the winner of that Bama-LSU game should jump Ohio State just based on quality win. But there are other Big Ten teams that bolster Ohio State's chances here. Penn State at 4, Wisconsin at 13, Michigan at 14, Minnesota at 17, Iowa at 18. The Big Ten and the SEC are the top two conferences in college football. I think we knew that going into the regular season. We talked about the amount of teams. If I'm not mistaken, there was 15 teams from those two conferences, 13 teams, something like that, ranked going into the season. It's a substantial margin. Those are the two best conferences in college football. I don't think anyone would argue about that. It was bad news for the Big 12. They were the big losers in these initial rankings. Kansas State comes in at number 16. Oklahoma State, despite three losses, at number 23. But Baylor was number 12, behind two lost teams from the SEC. And the Bears still have a couple of games where they could come out looking impressive. They still have to play Oklahoma. They'll still go toe-to-toe with Texas. Both of those games will take place this month. But the biggest blow was obviously with Oklahoma. And this is, again, where the Pac-12 plays a massive role because Oklahoma comes in behind Utah and Oregon. So I don't see how Oklahoma can jump either Oregon or Utah, which either one of those teams went out. I don't think Oklahoma can jump them, which tells me the Big 12's out. I mean, just looking at it realistically, despite the fact that we have talked an awful lot about Oklahoma, we've talked an awful lot about Jalen Hurts and Lincoln Riley, to me, with these first rankings, and I always say don't overreact, but I'm just looking at things logically. The first rankings, the committee has them slotted behind 2 1-loss teams in the Pac-12. I don't see a road for Oklahoma to get back into the mix. And we know the Big 12's not great to begin with. They lost to Kansas State. Utah lost to USC. So if you're Oklahoma, if you're the Big 12, in my mind, you were the big losers with these first college football playoff rankings, which were released yesterday. That's going to do it for us on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always a pleasure to be along with you. Sometimes an hour is just not enough. I want to thank Scott Merrill for taking out the time to join us. Also, Coach Ammon Bennett. Tomorrow, we're going to start talking basketball. We'll be joined by USU Eastern women's coach Chelsea Warburton, and we'll continue to talk some NBA as well. Jazz Sixers tonight. Tip-off for that game is set for 7 p.m. Be safe. I am out.